The Optimist. Conversations with leaders and industries shaping Europe's future. Exploring the ideas and innovations driving progress across the continent.
Welcome to The Optimist, the Real Talk podcast with leaders who are shaping Europe's digital future. My name is Moritz Schönleber, I'm the Tech Community Lead. Artificial intelligence is rapidly moving from experimentation into the core of the global economy. While much of the conversation focuses on large language models from the US or breakthroughs in Asia, Europe may have a different path forward. That's why today our moderator Dale Rickert is joined by Thomas Saueressig. He's the Chief Customer Officer and member of the Executive Board at SAP. Together they talk about three themes: how AI is transforming enterprise productivity, why Europe's industrial base could become its biggest AI advantage, and finally, what sovereignty really means in a global tech ecosystem. So have fun and see you later.
Pleasure to have you here, Thomas.
Thank you so much for having me. Absolutely, such a pleasure.
Fantastic. Thomas, tell us a bit about what you do, what your day looks like. What are your interactions in the company? How much is to do with AI and how much customer-facing interactions do you have in this area of AI in enterprise?
Yeah, as Chief Customer Officer for SAP, responsible for the entire customer value group, I'm responsible fundamentally from pre-sales, sales, post-sales, service and support, cloud operations, cloud infrastructure, sovereign cloud, and cybersecurity. So basically the entire lifecycle. Having said that, to your point, I have daily conversation with customer, and you can be assured top of mind is the topic of AI and how we can use AI to drive real productivity gains in the enterprise, because we talk a lot about that in the consumer space, but for sure, the expectation is high as well in the companies. And that's exactly very exciting for me to have this opportunity to drive innovation adoption.
It's fascinating you say that. And I think, you know, I have a lot of conversation with potential speakers for our upcoming tech event in Heilbronn. And many say they haven't hit the sweet spot yet. They don't really know how to get that EBIT, to really get the payback from AI investments. What is your advice for them and how do you interact with this topic? Obviously, it's a changing and evolving picture, but I'd be interested to hear how you see that in your organization.
I think it's fair to say that there are many studies around that and research about in the enterprise that the adoption of AI is harder. This has multiple aspects. The one thing is for sure, how do you ensure as a company compliant, ethical AI? Because for sure, we talk about business critical environments. On the other hand side, to make AI meaningful and really drive the benefit, for sure, you need proprietary data access. You need to see how a company's specific information and context can be leveraged. And that's exactly where we at SAP, we want to provide this business context. So we will bring together the best technology from all the Anthropics, OpenAIs of the world. But the business context is what is differentiating. And when I talk about business context, for sure, it's a combination of business data, business processes, and the entire compliance and governance around it, which is absolutely critical. And with that, you have embedded AI in your processes, which fundamentally will change how people work and with that, how companies will run in the future.
What kind of efficiencies do you think we'll see? Is it about, you know, the jobs that we don't like doing, filling in Excel sheets? At what point will we get to the fact we can actually think about processes and process chains being completely autonomous?
Actually, we see that already with the customers. And it's quite diverse by use case, to be very honest. I mean, the most prominent use case, what we see is software development. And I think that the tech industry disrupted themselves with the advancements of AI. So we are in a massive transformation. And think about code generation as one of the topics. For sure, software developers will work differently in the future. So it's not only about the task which we don't like to do or the mundane tasks or repetitive tasks which we want to automate. It's also getting to the core of the roles, of the jobs in certain categories. And I think that is a difference which we haven't seen before. A lot of automation, to your point, back in the old days with RPA and generic automation capabilities, were solving these repetitive, mundane tasks. But now we really get to the core, and that's exciting what we see. We see already massive improvements with regards to, for instance, quality assurance in production lines. Or if you think about transportation management and delivery nodes in big warehouses, which you fundamentally can optimize the entire process leveraging AI. So really in the core value chain, you see these advancements and these drive true business value to our customers.
It's fascinating. You mentioned a key thing about process data, about factory level improvements in efficiency. Do you think Europe has a unique opportunity here? Because, you know, we have a huge industrial background. We have a history of digitization, of operational excellence. We're not always, you know, the leaders in front edge business model innovation in terms of AI, but maybe we can actually use this industrial backbone to become an AI industrial leader.
I think you have an absolutely important point here. While a lot of public conversation is about LLMs and what they can do, the reality is, if you think about the true value generation, this is happening in the vertical industry edge. And that's exactly where, to your point, I feel Europe and also Germany, we have such a deep industrial base, all the mid-sized companies, production, manufacturing, what we since decades and actually centuries have optimized. This is something which is a unique asset which we have. So if you think about industry AI, industry models, if you think about how to use that, that is something where I truly believe Europe must take the lead in that one and must benefit from the value generation of the opportunity in that sense. And that's why we're looking forward also with the partnerships we have in place with many companies to drive the next frontier on industry AI. I think that will be a key differentiator. And I also believe this is also not mutually exclusive with regards to LLMs, because what you will see is a combination of leveraging LLMs and reasoning model, but connected to knowledge graphs and industry models and industry data, bringing all of that together for the benefit of our customers. And that's exactly where I believe the unique sweet spot for Europe lies. Plus, what I mentioned earlier, think about ethical approaches of AI and the compliance around it. And that's also something when, in my conversation with customers, actually all of our customers are worried about, if you have hundreds, potentially thousands of agents collaborating, how do you ensure that each and every single agent has only a very specific authorization, what this agent is able to do, because we have compliance, SOC reporting and all of that stuff. And this is something where I think this is now the next level of what we need to provide for AI. And there I feel Europe has an edge.
You know, it's interesting. You bring up this issue of compliance. And, you know, I have many conversations with young founders from startups who will tell me that they're looking to California because they want to get away from this regulatory environment, because they want the freedom to train data on, you know, work on human data and this kind of thing. Where is regulation actually a benefit to Europe? And why do we need regulation in the way that we have it? Because if you look at the comparison to the US, almost the feeling would be that the US deregulates privacy and, you know, the rule of law to make it easier for business or technology companies to succeed. And Europe does the opposite, regulates tech to make sure that we keep privacy and safe systems in place.
I think if you allow, I would separate it in two distinct topics. The one is data protection, and there fundamentally I would agree that Europe went a little bit too far with our regulation, which makes it cumbersome and difficult, especially to train models and the likes, and for young founders to combine the AI Act with the Data Act with GDPR. That's all complex. So I agree there's an over-regulation in Europe, which we must tackle in that sense. But on the compliance side, also in the US, every US-listed company in the New York Stock Exchange need to consider the Sarbanes-Oxley Act. So compliance is also in the US a big thing. And we should not underestimate that. And that's exactly where I believe we absolutely can have these advantages. I also do believe that in general, regulation is not a negative thing if done right. I give you one example, perhaps, to compare it a little bit. If you go to a plane, you trust that this plane is maintained, that the pilot had all the respective certifications and licenses, and that he also slept before sufficiently enough to could get on a plane. While actually flying is one of the most risky things on this planet, it's actually super safe because of globally aligned regulations. So you trust if you go on a plane, it will work. And actually it does. It's one of the safest transport in the meantime. So the regulation, I would argue, for planes and the pilots most probably was not a negative thing, while for sure, if you argue with companies, certifications of pilots and the likes is a burden, but you need to have trust. And I feel one of the obstacles these days with AI is trust is missing, especially in a business critical context in enterprises. So I feel the right regulation, and not the overburdening regulation, but the right regulation to ensure that if people use AI, that they can trust AI, will be an important way to overcome the adoption barrier. for AI, and especially in the enterprise context, again, coming back to, because you must be compliant, otherwise you go to jail, because people are personally liable if you are on the board of a company. And as I have this pleasure to be there, I can assure you, for sure, I want to ensure that we are compliant. Don't want to go to prison to use AI. Just kidding aside now, I mean, that was a little bit too fast stretch. But I guess you get the point. So baseline good regulation might be actually a good thing.
Well, I signed a similar document as Geschäft Führer of Tech, and I'm also personally liable for the company. So I understand the context within this. And it's a real thing. Let's face it. If it doesn't matter if an agent breaks the law in your company, you're the one in the end that's going to stand up in front of the court. And I think, you know, you bring up an issue, you've mentioned trust. And I think trust is fundamental at the center of our discussions that we need to have around technology generally and around AI. But also, if we want to talk about Europe. And for me, I actually see this differently. I don't see that we need to think of regulation necessarily as a hindrance to our business success, because many of the regulations, if they're done well, as you said, has to be done well. If it's done well, that builds trust. We're protecting things like the rule of law. And in business, this builds long-term business relationships. So for Europe, this could be seen as the key advantage in the end, not a hindrance, if we do it well.
And interestingly, if you think about now SAP, actually the interesting piece, since 2018, we have an AI ethics council, including external participation of professors and the likes, because we, even before any of the regulation, we considered it a super important topic for us, that every single AI use case which we want to deliver, we validate actually, is it the right thing to do from an ethical perspective? In 2022, actually in the beginning of 2022, before the ChatGPT moment in end of 2022, we actually ensured that every single SAP employee needed to sign an AI ethics policy, an AI policy, how we want to use AI internally, what kind of use cases we want to deliver. And because for us, it's part of our core value system as a company, because SAP is a company, we want to ensure that our customers trust us, because we run the most business critical processes of each of the enterprises. So trust is of utmost value for us and a core DNA of SAP. So sometimes I also feel it's not always looking to the politicians and the governments about that, but it's also what each single company can do and do the right thing. And it is also sometimes differentiating the one or the other market participants, I feel. But I think also in something like that, to your point, the right regulations from a government perspective. And then, for sure, I assume every company has own values and DNA systems, and that will also then differentiate in the market. And we for sure have the highest standard, because we serve from defense companies to retail companies, the full spectrum of companies and governments around the globe. And that's the reason for sure we are very clear what that means and what kind of obligation, responsibility we carry. And we take that super seriously.
You know, on the issue of trust, because, you know, you mentioned trust in business and why that's so important for you as SAP, but for any business really. And, you know, we've seen example after example, when that goes wrong, how damaging that can be for the company over the long term. I mean, you look at, you know, Volkswagen, after the diesel scandal, their stock market price dropped by 2/3. Billions wiped off the stock market overnight. And this issue around why we need to make sure we take care with new technologies, particularly where we're not really sure how they work underneath the hood, I think we have to really go forward carefully. Do you evaluate every new implementation of AI then in your company?
Absolutely. Every AI case, as mentioned, is checked by the ethical approach and compliance, naturally, because of the application. I mean, we talk about 400,000 customers around the globe, which is the potential target group for all of our AI capabilities in all of the industries, which means we cannot compromise at all. Actually, one US general once said, if you think about compliance is expensive, try non-compliance. And I think that's a good thing, because he's right. For sure, all needs to be in balance. And we talk a lot about now compliance and ethics. But I actually do believe the foundation of trust is key. And then think about the positive upside which we will see leveraging AI in the future. And that's where, quite frankly, I'm so excited about the art of the possible. And while I know that there's a lot of worries about what does it mean with jobs and the likes, the reality in every technology change which we've seen the last centuries, in the end of the day, it created more jobs. And also, if you go back after the Second World War, today, actually more than 80% of the the new jobs which are there. So really new jobs is coming out of the new technology. It's actually fascinating. And that's something where I see that as a huge opportunity. But it will be something where everybody, every single one, individual one, but also every company has an obligation to see how do we embrace this for the future. And that for sure will change society. I'm a deep believer that AI will have a massive impact. I believe a positive one if we do it right, but certainly something we need to take very seriously.
I think you're talking a lot around here is good governance. And I think this is actually something that I'm really proud of Europe for the way we approach this in terms of what's happening at the European Union level, but also just generally in the DNA of companies, that we do care about the people who work for us, that we do want good outcomes from society. We don't just want to maximize profit for profit's sake. And I think this really brings us now to a big issue, which is European sovereignty. I mean, if we take a look around us, these are dark times. We've got war on the doorstep of Europe. You know, petrol prices are going through the roof. What do we need to do now to protect European sovereignty? Why is it important? And how do we build up a European ecosystem?
I think we need to recognize that in the new world order, which is effective already, the reality is technology has become geopolitical and technology power has become a forcing factor for decisions and power, which means for sure Europe must be sovereign in our capabilities. But I believe we need to be very important to define sovereignty in the right way and what we want to achieve with sovereignty. And there I see a little bit sometimes too many, let's say, puristic theoretical approaches about that topic. I'll give you an example. We all know that in Europe, 70 to whatever, 80% of the cloud infrastructure is coming from US hyperscalers. On the one hand side, we could argue, oh, that's a risk. On the other hand side, the question is, where do we have actually mutual dependencies? Because also the US is heavily dependent on a lot of technologies from Europe. And the more mutual dependencies we have, the better it is to avoid any sort of negative impact. Having said that, that means for Europe, we must have more tech leadership. We must have more leading technologies which we deliver and more European champions which are competitive globally. Because the more competitive we are in the biggest market of the world, like US, and the more dependencies by definition this will create, the better conversations we have in this geopolitical game. And that's the reason why, for me, if you talk about sovereignty, innovation and sovereignty cannot be mutually exclusive. We need to ensure that we can leverage globally the best technology on this planet, but in a sovereign fashion in Europe. Because for the competitiveness of Europe and the productivity of Europe, we cannot ignore leading technology. Otherwise, we would fall even further behind in the productivity game. And that would have a long-term, way more negative aspect. And I think the last century, I would argue, has proven that the globalization is actually a good thing and that we leverage from the vast investments and benefits and research around the globe. But coming back to, for sure, it needs to be sovereign. When I talk about sovereign, allow me for perhaps to define sovereignty from our perspective. If I talk about sovereignty, I talk about four different dimensions. The first one, for sure, we need data sovereignty. Absolutely essential. We need the data on European soil. Check mark. The second is technical sovereignty. For sure, we need to own and carry this technology forward. Third is operations sovereignty, which means we have European citizens, perhaps even security clarified citizens, who basically operate all these technologies. And last but not least, legal and jurisdiction sovereignty, which means, very simple speaking, that the US Cloud Act is not relevant for European, that the Section 702 is not relevant. And that's exactly where we, as of today, have solutions who can do that, even leveraging US technology, but in this sovereign context in Germany and in Europe, which I think is important that we don't ignore that, because we must leverage globally the best technology.
It's fascinating hearing this. And I think the complexities play out once you really start to talk about the operational realities as well of what it means to be sovereign. Sovereign as a concept around values, as you mentioned, around how we look after data, the personnel as well. I had a fascinating conversation 2 weeks ago with a major automotive parts manufacturer with factories all around the world. He was responsible for managing reporting and data. And he said, look, we cannot run global operations on European sovereign cloud. Just there's no possible way because all of our, you know, our inventory, everything is global. So we have to have options that are flexible. But at the same time, for critical infrastructure, we need to make sure we protect those things which we do not want to be sitting in US clouds. I think...
Yeah, and I think you mentioned one word, which was options, because I also believe sovereignty means you have optionality, you have alternatives, that you, if worst thing happens, that you have the opportunity to change. So which means we need some offerings to have this balance. But I think it's very important that we acknowledge that leveraging the best technology around the world to drive productivity, to drive growth, is exactly the vehicle to again fuel the innovation in Europe, and then with the ambition to have global leaders. Because what I sometimes, why I'm a little bit frustrated sometimes, if we would reduce ourselves to this buy European, that we just buy European for the sake of European. I don't want to buy European for the sake of European. I want to buy European because we are proud that we have leading technology, and that's the reason we buy European, because we have global champions out of Europe which were growing and competing around the world. And I think that level of ambition is what we should have in Europe, that we don't reduce ourselves to, oh, it's sufficiently enough if we are in Europe successful. No, if you're not successful in the largest market on this world, coming back to my mutual dependencies, we will not do that. And sometimes we also forget a little bit in this sometimes more emotional conversation that we already have that today in certain parts, which is super critical. Not only ASML, on SAP, Siemens and others. Think about something like mobile network. The reality is, if you think about the Western world, there are only two companies who provide the 5G RAN systems, which is Ericsson and Nokia, both in Europe. So basically in the US, if you don't want to have that they have mobile connectivity anymore, just say Ericsson and Nokia is not allowed to ship anymore to the US. So these mutual dependencies is something which I feel we need to have a way more strategic conversation. But then again, with the ambition, not in Europe for Europe only, but to have these amazing companies win around the world. And that's, I think, the ambition we should have. And I'm proud that SAP is certainly one of these European champions, which is globally competitive. And that's, I think, is important. We need more of them.
And I think that's a really interesting point, because from what I understand, you also work on this together with many of these upcoming new generation companies. And you said it earlier, we need frontline platforms from Europe in the AI space. We need to be competitive here. An example would be Mistral. From what I understand, you already have a partnership with Mistral.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, SAP is anyway a company which is deeply believing in strong partnerships, and Mistral is one of the partnerships we have. Also Cohere from Canada in that sense. But also think about our partnerships with the Telekom and T-Systems or the Schwarz Group with Schwarz Digits and Stackit. So we basically want to bring the ecosystem in Europe, in Germany together. I believe in the strengths of the community, and that I think is very important. And I also believe if we collectively get together in Europe and strengthen these bonds, this will again have a flywheel positive impact on the long run. So I'm very excited about the potential what we can do. But also what is important, that for all the activities which we do, that we don't try to do it just a me too from the US, that we are running behind the US. That would be the wrong approach to compete. We need to differentiate on our terms. Like, again, coming back to the LLM and AI conversation, just running behind an Anthropic and OpenAI will not be a successful equation. But if we now focus on industry, on small models, on business, on B2B and enterprise, there I feel we have all the opportunity in our hands to really succeed in the market. And with that, again, create mutual dependencies, which help us also geopolitically. And that's, I think, very important, that we don't just believe we need to run and do the same like somebody else. I mean, I always say, if you do the same like everybody else, I mean, what's the point in differentiation? And that fundamentally will lead to a race to the bottom, which also is not a good thing. So you need to be clear on your differentiating value, which you can create, the competencies which are unique to your company, or in this case, also in Europe in general. And we need to win that. What we also should not ignore is the future potential. I mean, now we talk a lot about AI, and it's super critical because, as I mentioned, it will change our society in all aspects. But also, the next frontier is already in line. Think about fusion energy. Think about quantum, which I believe in Europe, we have the leading research for those topics. And also here, geopolitically, energy will become one of the most important forcing factors in the world. And also the US, quite frankly, there's currently a lot of estimation that in 3 to 4 years, US is running out of energy. And then you have, again, a total different dependency again. If we would make the first fusion reactor successful and prove that point and could export it around the globe, energy is an important aspect. The next thing is quantum. we have leading quantum research and also startups in Europe. Quantum will entirely change again the nature of software architectures and what's the art of the possible. And especially if you combine AI with quantum in the future, think about that boost. So let's also not forget in all of the we run behind some AI and some gigafactories and whatever infrastructure, me too play. Think about, let's be for those new things, which will be equally disruptive and has an equal opportunity, that we win in those. And that's also important for me, that we don't, again, just reduce to the current topic at hand and we forget the future. And that's something where I hope that we also collectively see that as a huge opportunity for Europe to shape the future of tomorrow.
And, you know, it's interesting listening to you. I almost feel like you're writing down the list of topics for our program for tech in Heilbronn in May, June. And actually, that's another issue. You're not just investing in the next technology players, you're investing in the ecosystem. So you've come on board with tech as an initiator. What's your vision? What's your hope that we achieve with tech in the next coming 5 years?
I think what I already saw after the first tech event is actually the community which is coming together from large enterprises to medium-sized enterprises to startups to academia to politicians and the government. And if we bring that community together, it's fruitful. It's mutually fruitful by definition. And we saw already amazing connections which we made last year in Heilbronn, which is, again, changing our partnerships, our ecosystem approach. So I believe tech is a unique event which brings together these leading research, business leaders, all of them together. And that's important, this community. And so I'm actually excited. And I like that the spirit is about optimism. Because I think in Europe sometimes, or in Germany specifically, we are sometimes a little bit too critical and negative. And it's good that we are reflective and honest. That's good. But sometimes we are too critical and negative. And what we always underestimate is what we can achieve on the long run. We always overestimate what we can do on a short term, but we underestimate what we can do in the long run, and that this game is not yet over. Another good example, just on a more macro level. I mean, 40 years ago, China was in a different world with regards to their businesses, their GDP and their growth and basically all of them. And now they are the second largest GDP country in the world with a huge growth rate. So sometimes 40 years, right leadership and the right approach, you can overtake people. So we sometimes forget, oh, now AI here and poo. We see in Europe sometimes these problems instead of understanding if we now take the right choices for the long run, we can absolutely change the game in this world. We should not forget that possibility what we have. And that's the reason why I love it with the tech. It's about optimism. It's about the future. It's about community getting together and strengthened. And that's exactly what we need more than ever in this geopolitical world. I mean, who could assume what happened in the last 12 months on this planet and how the planet evolved, that in the World Economic Forum in Davos, I mean, even our Chancellor Merz said, we are now in a new era. And it's actually interesting. The last couple of years, I always talked about uncertainties because think about it, from COVID, the Ukraine war, a new administration, there was always uncertainties. Now we don't have uncertainties anymore. We are certainly in a new world. We are certain on that one. We live in a new geopolitical world order. We must accept it. Even if you don't like it, we must accept it, take the right choices and decisions to move ahead in the future. And that's the reason why coming back to tech as a European event, it's more important than ever that European gets the act together. And I also hope that the European Union takes decisive, consequential decisions how we really take synergies in the European Union, because it's not enough to say, oh, we have 450 million citizens in the European Union and that's so big. The reality is it's still 27 markets, various different languages. And also if you think about digital, we don't have a digital union. We should have a digital union. I'm, as we speak, talk with 27 governments about sovereign clouds. And now we both know that cloud is about scale. And we could use that scale of 450 million users. But the reality is we, again, reduce and make everything small again, nation by nation. And that's certainly a call out, which I want to clearly do, and also on tech to the politicians. We must start talking about digital union, taking the synergies to really scale. Everything else is, again, especially in the competition left and right on the planet, will not work, because we need this scale and we need a unified approach. That's the reason why I'm a deep believer in Europe and the European Union, but we must make it right. As we speak, I don't see that. I don't see that. I see that the European GDPR is interpreted differently by 27 nations. I even see in Germany, with 16 states, we have 18 data protection officers, and every state is interpreting it even differently, which means we need to stop this fragmentation. We need to make it way more easier, especially for startups that we really can scale in Europe. And if we don't do that, we should not be surprised that a lot of startups move to the US. And we still worry about that one, where I say it's so obvious what we need to do. And I hope that with all the call to actions we received the last 12 months, that the politicians will take consequential, decisive actions, because otherwise this will be a competitive obstacle for Europe.
One startup actually mentioned to me a while back that the analogy was, imagine trying to run down a hill and every 10 meters you've got to stop to open a gate. And that was the analogy in terms of regulation. But I think the core message what you're giving here is that there are huge challenges, but now is the time to act. We have to accept that the world order has changed, but this is an opportunity. Now, what I love about your approach here is this isn't undoable. The future is in our hands. We just have to ride it. And I think with this positive, optimistic message, this is the Optimist Podcast. It's a wonderful way to end. You can catch Thomas Saurisic on stage, opening morning, home stage at Tech from the 31st of May till the 2nd of June. He'll be on Monday, and we're looking forward to seeing him there. Thanks so much for being part of the podcast, and look forward to seeing you in Heilbronn.
Thank you.
That was Dale talking to Thomas Saurisic. As always, we'd like to close this podcast with our Tech Lounge segment, where we bring in voices and questions from the community. Questions we've gathered ourselves from our audience and sometimes even from within the tech team. So the first one comes from a recent conversation with participants looking ahead to tech in Heilbronn. With AI being such a dominant topic this year, how are you personally, Dale, deciding what actually makes it onto the tech stage?
Yeah, interesting question. So I guess there's a couple of factors for us. What we really want to look at is two key elements. One is, what do people need right now to succeed in their current AI pilots? There's so many companies right now rolling out pilot projects, testing AI. It's kind of an exploration period right now for many companies. And this means they want to understand how they can understand what types of solutions are going to be most effective for different use cases, and then how they can actually make sure that those pilots that they do run are successful. That's category one. So we're using these really practical use cases, things like, how do you apply AI in highly complex and regulated industries? That's one of our panels where we've got Novartis, we've got an AI integration specialist from BNP Paribas in France, or other sessions where we're looking at you know, particular engagements for AI in specific industries. And the other aspect, the second category, is long-term. So where do we need to go in the next 3 to 5 years to see the real return on investment from money spent on AI engagements in large enterprise? And there we're going away from those, you know, right now you're talking about microservices for AI, really solving small problems, but looking at process chains, big AI, connected intelligent agents in organizations, making them more efficient and actually having autonomous decision-making, that movement towards the idea of the autonomous enterprise. And that's I guess that's the long horizon where people can understand about where they're going with their big strategy.
Right. I mean, Heilbronn is all about content, right? But also formats are important. Tech brings together policymakers, corporates, startups, and academia. Because you're concepting all of this, is there one format or one moment in the program where you think, yeah, this is really tech, I'm really proud of this moment, I already see that this will be a great moment?
Well, there's a couple of things, and one of them is a work in progress. So I almost don't want to announce it on our podcast, but I'll give you a teaser. Mm-hmm. It involves robots, not just one, but many robots, mm-hmm. and it will be highly interactive. And hopefully there'll be posts over the internet if we pull it off. So that's all I'll say from this point of view.
Oh,
and
wow.
The second thing, and that's a little teaser, I can't go further than that. The second thing is, we want to have hands-on experience. So we won't only be seeing robots on stage and walking around the exhibition, there'll be cooking robots at our event. So you'll be actually able to eat food made prepared by robots at Tech. And then the final aspect is we really want to bring in the next generation and help support upcoming startups and students who are working in the deep tech arena. So with this, we've actually creating two major content pieces. There'll be announcements coming up after Easter. One is our Startup Slam, which will be a three-round competition with different category focuses and different technologies. The three finalists from every one of these, all chosen with audience voting, will land on the main stage of our event with a big ceremony and a large audience voting, also broadcast across our channels live and a live stream. And the second is starting the weekend before tech. We've actually got a hackathon involving over 250 students. We've collaborated with TUM Heilbronn. Students will be coming from other universities as well, working in multidisciplinary teams to try to solve industry challenges, and they'll be presenting them live on stage on the final day of tech. So it's kind of, you know, connecting in that next generation of tech creators who are going to be innovating and bringing in new, fresh air to industry through their engagements with tech participants.
Wow. So it really is not just another tech conference. It's a platform. It's an innovation hub. Yeah, looking so much forward, Dale. Thank you so much for your time. And thank you to talk to Thomas Sauer-Essig.
You're welcome.
That's it for today. Thank you very much for joining us on The Optimist. If you enjoyed this episode, we'd love your feedback on Spotify on whichever platform you're listening from. You can also reach us anytime at hello@tech-europe.org. See you next time and stay optimistic.
Thanks for listening to The Optimist. For more insights and updates about tech, visit us at tech-europe.org. The Optimist is produced by Tech by Handelsblatt. Music by Christian Heinemann. Stay curious.